Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast. This is the first podcast of the new 2018-2019 basketball season, and we have a guest, Stephen Kalail, writer from Def Pen Sports and a frequent guest last year on the podcast. Stephen, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Sean. Just happy to be back on the podcast and to talk a little college hoops for this upcoming season.
Yeah, so we're now 2 days into the season, and this podcast comes at a good time because it's about a year since you made your podcast debut. This was right after the Champions Classic, where last year Duke had an easy victory over Michigan State, which surprised some people. And now one year forward, they put an absolute beatdown on Kentucky, scoring 118 points. I don't know when the last time Duke put up over 110, let alone 118 against Kentucky, who is favored by 2 points in that game, a lot of the top freshmen. And this time last year, Grayson Allen was coming off a standout game, and we kind of joked, is Grayson Allen already the player of the year? And obviously a lot of things happened after that. So interested on your take from last night and, you know, what you saw from both Duke and Kentucky, and then what some of your future predictions for both of those teams are.
Yeah, definitely. So for Duke, obviously the main takeaway from the beatdown game over UK is how well the trio of freshmen played: RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Zion Williamson. And also, I also think there is a little bit of concern for Kentucky, although it is one game. Reed Travis seemed to have brought his game from Stanford as an impact transfer. He had 22-7. Keldon Johnson was solid, but they did seem to have some issues at the point guard position between Green and Quickly and Higgins. So a couple of quick observations there. It's just, you know, I think that Barrett, Reddish, and Williamson all showed that they were the three best players on that court, and that all of them probably just could be are in it. The hype was real for Duke.
Well, each year they are hyped up beyond belief, just given that they've overtaken Kentucky and Calipari in the recruiting world of one and done players. But I think definitely the performance yesterday surprised a lot of people, and I guess we'll start first with the losing team, Kentucky, because now they have a mix of sophomores and freshmen to go along with Reed Travis. So there's high expectations given Calipari actually had some returning players. And one guy I was expecting more from is PJ Washington. He finished with 8 points, 2 rebounds, 5 fouls in 17 minutes. So not a game for him to remember, but I definitely think he'll have room to improve. But how does Kentucky kind of go from here? They have a lot of talent, but once again, it seems similar to last year that the pieces don't really fit that well together. How do you think, I know Kentucky usually improves as the year goes on, but how do you kind of see this Kentucky team compared to ones in years past?
Well, like I alluded to earlier, I think the point guard situation is going to have to figure itself out pretty quickly between Higgins and Quickly, and who's going to take the lead there.
What would you do if you were Cal with that point guard situation?
I think I would stick with Quickly for now and go with him for a while. I don't think we're at the panic point yet to not have him be kind of the man there, but I do think that they might have to, they're going to have to stick with Quickly, I think, for a little bit. But, you know, Higgins is a guy that's been projected as a pretty high NBA draft pick too. So that's a tough one for me, but I think Quickly's stick with it for a while, see what happens. And then, you know, you do have another 5-star in the wing. The trio of sophomores, I think, had a pretty rough time yesterday between Richards, Washington, and Green. So that group has got to step up. I think they had a combined 9 points between the three, something like that. So between those three, they've got to really show some veteran leadership and really help out, I think, Reed Travis.
No, I agree. And I think the point guard situation, Quade Green definitely wasn't the answer last year. He'll probably get bumped down the bench. I do love Ashton Hagens and his quickness, but you know, it'll be a battle between him and Quickly as to which one can get adjusted sooner rather than later. Tyler Hero is supposed to be their answer from the outside as to the guy that could hit perimeter shots. And while he is a standout shooter, you know, I still don't think he's a ideal fit in Kentucky. And, you know, yesterday he was jacking up a lot of shots, only went 1 for 6 from the 3-point line. So will be interesting to see if he continues that stranglehold on the shooting guard position, or if he kind of comes off the bench to ideally provide some fire off the bench. But in terms of Duke, they went 12 of 26 from the 3-point line. They shot 59% from two, basically getting to the line anytime, or getting to the rim anytime they wanted. How would you kind of slow them down, if at all, given they're all going 6'7", 6'8" with the big three?
I'm not sure you can slow them down with all three of those guys. I mean, frankly, I think the only team off the top of my head that may have a chance at slowing them down with their depth is Kansas, but I thought Kentucky would do a better job with it. But I, like I was kind of saying earlier, Barrett, Reddish, and Williamson are all just, they're NBA starters at some point in their career. So I'm not really sure what you could do.
Yeah, I mean, Barrett, I've never been a huge, huge fan of him, but it definitely looks like he's gotten quicker and more athletic getting to the rim, which for me used to always be something I was looking at. I always loved Cam Reddish, and, you know, at 6'8", with the shooting stroke he has, if he plays with an intensity and fire, I think he definitely has a high ceiling. And then you have Zion, who's been talked about nonstop for 2+ years, and I know a lot has been made about his weight and his size, but he looked pretty, you know, pretty jacked and pretty strong. And once he got going to the basket, given his strength and athleticism, you're not going to really slow him down. And when he's knocking down threes and pull up jump shots, he's going to be a really tough cover. You know, I did like the fact that when any of those guys were getting the rebounds, that they're just pushing the ball up the court and starting to break themselves. And one guy we haven't talked about, Trey Jones, the younger brother of Tyus Jones, kind of the other member of the freshman class. You know, he had 6 points. He started the game with a 3-pointer, which kind of got Duke off and running, but he had 7 assists and 0 turnovers. And I still think he's going to be a significant key. You know, last year, Trayvon Duval was a point guard who brought some athleticism to Duke that they didn't really have at that spot before. But similar to his brother, Jones knows how to play the point, run the point, get people involved, and really is a great quarterback. So if anything happens with him, whether it's foul trouble or injury, I think they'll be in trouble. But I think his role is going to be extremely significant in terms of Duke trying to get back to the Final Four. One other, I guess, question regarding Duke. So they had Marquise Bolden in the starting lineup, a player that I'm have always been not so fond of, and he actually looked decent out there. But they played Jack White for 30 minutes, and he was kind of playing the Zubek or Plumlee role of you know, making sure you just crash the boards with 11. But do you think that really playing with a White, Bolden, Delorier, that they can kind of really survive with that? Or are kind of the big three, big four that good where it's fine having a role player as that fifth spot?
Yeah, I think that with their big three freshmen, I think they're going to be able to survive with White or Javin or Bolden manning the post for sure. And plus, I think we do forget that O'Connell is a solid contributor coming off the bench. And I think that even Goldwire can give a couple of decent minutes for Duke too. But I think they'll be just fine. Bolden obviously will be used for some of those bigger lineups, and I think Javin's going to be in there for some of the probably smaller lineups that are out there. I am a little surprised that White got 30 minutes though last night.
Yeah, I mean he definitely produced in those 30 minutes, but I think, you know, unless he's you know, only 6'7", so I think can be a liability. And if teams are playing man, can probably sag off him to watch for the other guys attacking the basket. You know, one thing, Duke played primarily man-to-man defense. Last year, they were a zone team because their defense was so poor, but they were very big, heavy last year. So it'll be interesting to see how they play defense going forward. You know, while they're definitely a national championship contender, Final Four threat, I still don't think they will win the ACC regular season. I'm still going UVA with that route, just due to their defense and kind of switching gears momentarily. They held a team to 40 points yesterday, which is not a surprise to anybody. But I do see Duke definitely picking up some losses in ACC play. But they'll probably enter ACC play undefeated, just given their relatively weak schedule through the months of November and December. But kind of going to the game before that, you had Kansas and Michigan State. Kansas came in around a 5-point favorite. Kansas was mixing in a few kind of top recruits along with a bunch of veteran players that were all transferred from the Lawson brothers. That had transferred from Memphis, Charlie Moore from Cal. And they jumped out to a lead early on, and the score, I think, made the game look a little closer than it was. But what were some of your brief thoughts on Kansas as a team and national contender?
So I think the first thing that stood out to me was Dedrick Lawson, and he was able to step up after his transfer year. I mean, it seems like he made the transition just fine from battling players in the AAC to high caliber competition like Michigan State. I mean, he ended up with 24-14-6. Quentin Grimes, obviously, his freshman debut was pretty strong. He was 6-for-10 from 3-point land. So those were two big takeaways from me. Azubuike looked pretty strong down low as well for me. So I thought that their depth showed. And like you said, the game score was a little bit closer than what it really was. So I think that Kansas is still my leader for they proved it to me that there's that from what my expectations were from the beginning of the season, that they're going to be in that top three, and they're actually my pick to be the national champion this year.
All right. Well, last year they made the Final Four, had a good run before falling to Villanova. But I think Lawson, you know, watching more Dedrick Lawson than KJ, but it'll be fascinating to watch him in Kansas and playing at a higher level than he was at Memphis. You know, definitely struggled shooting the ball yesterday, going 5 of 18. But he did put together 14 rebounds and 6 assists for the former McDonald's All-American. And, you know, the two freshmen, Devon Dotson and Quentin Grimes, I think both of them have high ceilings, and Dotson offers the speed and Quentin Grimes at kind of 6'5", 210 is steady with a lot of size, and they combine for 37 right off the bat. So I think, I think Kansas will probably win the Big 12 again. As far as Michigan State, they have a lot of talent, but, you know, I think they'll be at the top tier of the Big 10. But, I think a typical Izzo team that'll probably, you know, potentially struggle at times, but they'll be ready to play come March.
You know, for that game, I thought it was unexpectedly. I thought it was a high scoring game. I thought it would be a little bit lower, especially with the way that Michigan State plays defense. So I didn't expect that game to be that high scoring at all. Michigan State, Josh Langford, he definitely looked pretty good in the second half. It seems like some things kind of clicked for him. He's I think he might have to be relied on to be their leading scorer this year. But I mean, for Michigan State, the theme for them was free throws and turnovers killed them. So I mean, they definitely played stronger in the second half. But yeah, like I agree with you, they're going to be in that top tier of the Big Ten, you know, with Michigan and Wisconsin, et cetera. But you know, it's a good gauge game for them. But I think they're not at that level of the Dukes and Kansas is for sure.
Yeah, Michigan State, 19 assists, 18 turnovers, not a very typical Izzo game. So, you know, yesterday, along with those two games, there was, you know, probably about 100-plus games kicking off the season, and there weren't really any big upsets. Every team in the top 25 took care of business. So there wasn't, you know, anything major to write home about. I think Arizona State, they got taken to double overtime, so that was probably one of the closer games for a Power 5 school. But writing for DefPen, you had some previews. You know, was there anything that stuck out to the teams that you previewed or any of the other teams from yesterday?
So from some of the teams that I previewed, one of the teams I was really high on is Marquette. Obviously, your boy Marcus Howard is going to be big time this year with his. Everyone knew him last year from his 52-point game. So I look for them to be taking advantage of the Big East with everyone a little bit down overall in the conference, outside of Villanova, of course. They got a big-time transfer and from Fordham, Joe Chortnoy. They also have Brendan Bailey, who was a four-star recruit, but he went on a Mormon mission. So now he's back for the team. So he's basically a 21-year-old freshman player. So I think he's going to be big time for Marquette. But this year they have a lot of momentum. They're playing in a new arena that they're sharing with the Bucks. I think it's the Fiserv Center. Yep. I think that they can just move to the top of the Big East this year. I think this year is the year where there's some wiggle room for that second and third place where like it typically like Xavier held on to, but I think they can do it. This is probably Wojo's most talented team that he's had there. And I also think this is kind of a make or break year for Wojo in a lot of ways. I think Marquette's a school that's had a pretty strong basketball tradition. And if Wojo doesn't come up in the next couple of years, you know, it isn't a good look for him.
Yeah, this is his fifth year there, and, you know, struggled the first year when it was more of a rebuilding, and then 2019, 21 in 3 years. But, you know, in terms of the Big East, as you said, Xavier will definitely fall down, losing a lot of talent as well as their coach to your Louisville Cardinals. And Villanova, while still the class of the Big East, they definitely lost a lot to the NBA, although they did look pretty good yesterday. You know, granted, they're going against Morgan State, but the older guys, Phil Booth and Eric Pascal, led the way. And then you'll have players like Javon Quinterly that are coming along down the road. Do you think Marquette could challenge Villanova, or do you think they'll be settling, as you said, for that second spot?
I think they'll be settling for that second spot. I mean, I think that, you know, they'll give some tough games to Villanova, but I still like Nova in the Big East. And I do like St. John's as well, especially with Pons and with the Auburn transfer, Mustafa Heron being cleared. I think that St. John's is probably going to take a step up as well.
Okay. And one guy who didn't really have any impact on the Marquette game yesterday, and they're playing UMBC, the March Madness darlings of last year as the 16 seed that, you know, destroyed UVA in their first round matchup, was Ed Morrow, the 6'7" power forward Nebraska transfer and former player at Simeon, who was very rock solid at Nebraska. He only played 7 minutes yesterday, but I think he can definitely bring a lot to Marquette, and can kind of balance off a lot of the star power that they have with Marcus Howard and Sam Hauser, as really a key guy in the low blocks as the season gets going. I did want to ask you about Florida State. I know they had Florida on their docket and beat them by about 20 points. So I think while there weren't really any upsets, that was maybe one of the more, I'd say, surprising scores that I saw. What were your kind of takeaways when you were going through them during the season? I know they made a fun late run at the end of last year in the tournament, but were you kind of expecting them to blow the doors off of Florida early on?
I didn't think they would blow the doors off Florida early on, especially when I kind of tempered my expectations a little bit on Florida State because Phil Kofer did get hurt in the offseason. But with him coming back, I expect them to be a good team. I mean, they are going to fit the mold of a typical Florida State team that's got some talent. They're pretty athletic. But with Kofer getting granted that sixth year of eligibility, that made a big difference for them. So, you know, I do expect Florida State to definitely be in the top half of the ACC. And, you know, they could make a surprising run like they did last year. Last year, they snuck into the tournament after being kind of a hot team early. And then, I could see something very similar for them where they get in, you know, expectedly make the second week of the tournament.
Okay. And before we started recording, you had brought up one of your sleeper teams. So I'm curious as to who that team might be this year.
Yeah. So, my sleeper team is, a more local team to where I grew up, and that's, the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. The main reason I'm picking them is because they landed five-star freshman Charles Bassey, who was playing for who's from Nigeria but played at Aspire Academy in Louisville. And then they also have sophomore Tavion Hollingsworth and Delano Banton. So they've got a really talented team for Conference USA, and I feel like under a coach like Rick Stansberry, who's been around the block and coached a lot of talent and coached at a high level, if he can get Bassey and Hollingsworth and others to play together and, you know, stay out of trouble, they're a team that I think will, from a talent level perspective, probably trump everybody in Conference USA. And if they make the NCAA tournament, they're a team I would not want to play because, frankly, from a talent perspective, they're not too far off from some of the from a lot of teams they would probably encounter in the postseason.
Yeah, I got this chance to see them at the very end of last year in the NIT. Granted, they had a lot of turnover and as you said, brought in a lot of new players. So definitely a team to watch. I know NBA scouts will be watching Charles Bassey a lot throughout the year, and you know they got Washington, who I think come Pac-12 play will be one of the top teams in the conference. So you know it was an 18 point game yesterday that they lost on the road, but as you said, a team with talent and probably one of the more talented teams in the conference. So yeah, definitely looking forward to Western Kentucky, and then, you know, keeping it in the state of Kentucky as a Louisville expert, I know they did not kick off the season on Tuesday, so they're getting ready to begin. But one player I wanted to really ask you about is Jordan Nwora. He is a sophomore that was highly touted coming in, but yeah, played under 20 minutes last year, and when he was in, was a very efficient player, which is why I kind of have him pegged as a breakout guy. He's 6'7", 215. What are your expectations for Louisville as well as Jordan for this coming year?
So I'll start off with Jordan first. I actually think that Jordan might be he could be the leader of the team this year, mainly because I this offseason he actually played for the Nigerian National League team. He played in the FIBA Africa games, and I mean, for lack of better words, he balled out. He had plenty of games where he was averaging over 20. I think he had a game where he set a record with 36 points. He played against some, bigger, stronger competition than normal. So he kind of had kind of a breakout summer. So I'm expecting some big things from him. I think the Chris Mack offense is going to utilize his strengths, especially because he is a dead-eye shooter, but he's a little bit more than that. I mean, he can take it to the hole. He's an improving defender for Louisville. So, the only thing that I think that's going to stop him is just if other players can other some of the, Louisville has kind of a has a lot of similar forward type players with V.J. King and Dewayne Sutton. So, I think situationally he may not play in maybe some teams that where his defense may not be up to par, but I expect some big things, especially from the offensive end on him. As for Louisville themselves, this is this is a new territory for Louisville fans.
Chris Mack era.
It's the Mack era. It's the Chris Mack era, and Louisville's only really had four coaches in their entire history as a program. They had John Dromo, they had Denny Crum, Rick Pitino, and then David Padgett for a year. So, moving on to the Mack era, and Chris Mack has done basically everything you could possibly want for a coach coming into Louisville. Before actually coaching a regular season game, he with the monster recruiting class, just appealing to the fan base. He's done a great job in that sense. But my prediction for the Cards this year is that I think, like I said, Nwora, I think V.J. King will all have really good years. I think up front, I think the Connecticut transfer Stephen Enoch is going to be the key to the team in a lot of ways because. He's the only true big that fits Chris Mack's type of system, and they do have Malik Williams who doesn't necessarily fit, but he's gonna have to play more of a physical role than he was recruited to play under Rick Pitino. So I expect Louisville to be a classic bubble team at the end of the season. They're going to be a team that's probably going to be sweating it on Selection Sunday in order to get into the tournament. You'll see them probably lose some games inexplicably, probably beat a couple teams that they're predicted not to beat. So I think that they're your classic bubble team. I think Mac's going to probably get the most that he can out of this group of players. But overall as a program with so much that's happened for Louisville. This is something that's positive for the Cardinal fans and this team, and everyone's kind of rallying around them. So I expect the Mac area to get off to a pretty good start. I think that, classic bubble team, the fans won't be upset if they won't make it just because of all the turmoil and issues that have happened in the past few years. So it's refreshing to not have as much fan fatigue.
Yeah, I would imagine after last year, kind of going through that, and Chris Mack definitely a well-established coach, and I don't think you guys could have asked for much better in terms of getting a new coach for this year and to kind of begin, as you said, the new Mack era. And I think they get to ease into it really starting Thursday and into next week before. Taking on Tennessee right before Thanksgiving, and then following that up with Michigan State and at Seton Hall, even though Seton Hall won't be as good as they were last year. Definitely some good non-conference opponents, and then at Indiana and Romeo Langford. So I think you guys will be tested, and then should be interesting to watch in the ACC.
I think it'll be pretty interesting when you play Indiana, considering that Romeo Langford for quite some time when he was being recruited was a Louisville lean. And then obviously when Rick Pitino was fired, he Langford was uninterested in the Cards. So that was a guy that played basketball in New Albany, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville. So I think there's some interesting storylines there. And Louisville's non-conference schedule this year is one of the toughest in the country. So, the MAC era is going to be tested very early on.
Well, we'll definitely be interesting to watch. Is there anything, I'm curious your thoughts on what you're excited to see this season, whether it's from Louisville or in general, either players or teams or storylines to follow?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the main storyline for me is seeing how these Duke freshmen are going to turn out. I mean, we haven't seen, I think, this many touted guys come in, basically that were considered consensus in the top five, all playing in for one team. So I think that's one of the storylines that that's the obvious storyline we're going to be following. Also, the SEC is going to be a conference that has quite a bit of talent this year. There's some interesting teams in there, such as Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, along with Kentucky. So I think that's an interesting race as well to hone in on.
Don't forget LSU. Yes,
cannot forget our guy Will Wade in LSU.
Although all jokes aside, they do have some talent with a guy we chatted a lot about, Tremont Waters, coming back as a point guard, and then some guys that definitely caused the NCAA to, sniff their nose around LSU and Naz Reid, Emmett Williams, and Javonte Smart all landing in Baton Rouge. So definitely should be, in terms of talent, I think they'll definitely be up there with those other teams that you mentioned.
Right. Yeah. Another storyline is seeing Virginia play this year. I they're obviously going to be a very good team, but being the first number one seed to lose, and then just coming back into the season, it's going to be interesting to see how they react, how they play. Obviously, they got off to, a nice first start with the W, but they're a very good team, and when they get to the NCAA tournament, what's it going to be like for Virginia? After losing, being part of the biggest upset ever.
Yeah, I think UVA will be interesting, and I know I misspoke earlier saying they held Towson to under 40. They held them to 42, but I think we all know how the regular season is going to play out. They return, pretty much four starters and Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, who they obviously missed in the NCAA tournament, and who will probably be a projected lottery pick next year, as well as the big Jack Salt, who sets bone-crushing, moving offensive screens and does the dirty work. So, and then they bring Mama D off the bench, as well as Jay Huff, Marco Anthony, et cetera. So regular season, I think it's going to be a lot of the same old. They're going to have the top defense in the country. They don't really play anybody too tough out of conference. So high probability that they're entering ACC play undefeated again. And last year they went 17-1, which 17-1 in the ACC is pretty much impossible to do. I think I was touting the horn that the ACC wasn't that strong, which I think was shown in the tournament. But Tony Bennett is one of, or not the best coaches in America, so he always has his team playing better than their actual talent level, which I think is one of the main reasons that they have these upsets in March, is that, last year they're a one seed where really talent wise, were they a one? Probably not. Same with a few years ago, when they couldn't score 40 against Florida, they're a five seed. Were they a five seed? Probably not. So I think they're going to march through the regular season, probably in my mind, win the ACC regular season. And then it'll all come down to the tournament again. And do they fizzle out early, or do they maybe kind of take a page out of Jay Wright and Villanova, and all of a sudden they're marching to the Final Four when everybody has written them off. So definitely an interesting story to follow, but one how, you know, that we'll know how it'll play out throughout the regular season. Although one thing to add, I do think them getting Braxton Key from who played at Alabama last year without him having to sit out, I think is a huge, huge addition to them. And I think pretty understated for how that'll help them throughout the year.
Yeah, no, that's some added athleticism that Virginia could pretty much always needs.
Definitely. Well, last kind of topic for you. I know you had sent me the latest FBI link right before the podcast, what was on ESPN and some of the players that were detailed. But I guess with the FBI, at least one of the trials in the rearview mirror, and now kind of the headline that the NCAA is ready to investigate some of those schools, being from one of those schools that got hurt in the FBI probe, do you see anything coming this year or down the road?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I kind of feel like not much is going to happen. I think that everyone's just kind of going to get a mulligan for this one. They're going to say, you know, everyone messed up, and they might get some slaps on the wrist. But it's as a Louisville supporter, that's kind of a tough pill to swallow, because you've got Arizona that's been where they've had their head coach, you know, linked to, you know, the recruitment of Raleigh Alkins, Brian Bowen, Quinterly, DeAndre Ayton, Nasir Little, and then you've got Kansas where they basically had Susio Da Silva amongst Billy Preston, and the Kansas implications are unreal for Bill Self. I mean, there's direct text messages with him that are, I think you can kind of deduce that they're talking about specific players and payments potentially. And, you know, I don't see Self or Sean Miller really getting in too much trouble for this, except for maybe, you know, maybe a loss in scholarships, or maybe they have to forfeit some games at the most.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Right now, Silvio De Sousa is suspended for Kansas, and I think he was ready to have a big jump as a sophomore, given he only came in halfway through the year. But going through the FBI trial, you had a lot of coaches and teams that were frequently name dropped, whether it's Kansas and Bill Self or Sean Miller, and you can name any other Adidas school in that mix. But I'm with you. I don't really see a whole lot happening. I think the common person can deduce what has gone on and what has happened. But I would be surprised if there are any suspensions, whether it's player-wise or team-wise. I mean, you can kind of look down a lot of the rosters and kind of, you know, from the readings, you know, kind of have your suspicions. But, you know, you look at the game yesterday where Kansas and Bill Self were mentioned. Kentucky, you know, I'm sure much to your chagrin, escaped relatively unharmed with a lot of their players, probably due to the Nike connection, even though much has been said about Calipari and his recruiting over the years. And then you have Duke, who manages to get top 10 freshmen without really having their name dragged through the mud, even though you do have Zion Williamson, who is the face of Adidas basketball and who Adidas didn't really want to let out of their grasp. But I would be very surprised if anything happened this year or down the road to a lot of the bigger fish in the ocean.
Yeah, no, I agree with you for the sanctions for any of the teams going forward. It'll be interesting to see what the NCAA comes up with as their penalties, since they're now able to finally investigate, since they got the heads up, I believe, the other day from the FBI. Because, you know, a team like Louisville, for example, they changed out their head coach, their athletic director, school president, and one of their former assistant coaches, Kenny Johnson, was, it was mentioned in the trial that he paid $1,300 to Brian Bowen's father. So what else do you do to Louisville after they've, stripped them from a championship, replaced all their leadership? I mean, what else can you do? I mean, I don't think that the death penalty is an option for them, but it'll be interesting to see what the NCAA does.
Yeah, we shall see. But last question for you. Give me one team outside of the top, the standard top three or four that you think, we'll be hearing maybe more than expected from either come March or maybe throughout the season.
Out of the top three or top four, I would say the team that I think that I've been sort of falling in love with, and I believe that some other analysts are too, is the Nevada Wolfpack. Just with their team kind of came to play a little bit last year, but I feel like they've got a squad that's, a top 10 worthy squad. They've got the Martin brothers. They landed Jordan Brown out of Cal. Yeah, so I think that they're the team in the top 10 that's, not from a big conference. I mean, that's in the top 10 right now. They're not from a big conference that I think is going to make some waves. What do you think?
I don't know about making waves, but I guess three teams that I kind of have my eye on or I'm looking forward to watching. One would be Oregon. 2 years ago, they made their Final Four run. And then last year, while talented, kind of fell back down to earth. But they had Peyton Pritchard, so a steady point guard. And then they have Paul White, who's been around forever, as well as Bol Bol, the talked about 7'2" freshman, as well as Kenny Wooten, the shot blocking sensation. So I think they'll bounce back and will be a team to pay attention to in the Pac-12. And then Iowa State, once again, they have usually been a team, but last year they struggled going 13-18, but they have a lot of talented wings and guards with Lindell Wigginton returning and then Nick Weiler-Babb. But then you have Talon Horton-Tucker, the humongous freshman from Chicago, as well as Shayok, who transferred from UVA. So they're a team I'm interested in watching. And then finally, I know we touched on them briefly, but Indiana, I don't think they're going to, do a whole lot, but the fact that they do have Juwan Morgan. Now they have Romeo Langford and a guy who I think once again could be maybe not a breakout sophomore, but definitely see a big improvement is Justin Smith, the 6'7" wing who played with Jalen Brunson in high school. So those are three teams that I'm kind of interested in watching. And then, finally this Sunday get to watch in person the USC Vanderbilt game. USC has Kevin Porter, the talked about freshman from Seattle that looked really good yesterday in limited minutes. And he'll be going against two other potential one and done guys and Darius Garland and Simi Shittu. So that's some of the stuff I'm looking forward to, but overall glad that college basketball is back and looking forward to really the next 2 months of non-conference play before we get into the thick of things with conference play. So just want to thank you for coming on and once again chatting about the Champions Classic and looking forward to having you on throughout the year to talk college hoops and your thoughts and insights. So thank you.
Hey, thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. I love being on the podcast and look forward to some future appearances.
Sounds great. So this wraps up another edition of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast, which will be going back to regular 1 week edition starting today. And if you do have time or get to listen to the podcast, we'd ask that you go to iTunes and leave a review or retweet it But thanks again for listening, and glad to have college basketball back.